I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight inside me. Yeah, walking inside me, running down with life, I'm fighting in a falling down deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Frum. I'm going to play this recording this week of the ethnostate with Ken Givedan, Pastor Tom Robb, Rachel Pendergraft, myself, and William Johnson, chairman of the American Freedom Party, who of course was our host. So what follows now is this week's edition of the Ethnostate.
Hello everyone, this is William Johnson, chairman of the American Freedom Party, with another edition of the Ethnostate. We have today Ken Givedan, Rachel Pendergast, Paul Frum, and Pastor Tom Robb. Thank you guys for coming on today. It turns out that this is going to be the last show that we're going to be able to do for a long time. We're taking a break because Ken Givedan wouldn't pay our renewal fee. He wouldn't pay our appearance fees, which minus $5,000 a week, and that's just over his price right now. So we're going to be cutting back. So all of you, hundreds of thousands of viewers out there, let you know that after we have negotiations with CNN and we're back on their show, then we'll carry on in that format. But in any event, it's been very good to have you on this program, each of you, and so let's make this a memorable show. So we'll get right into the articles at hand. The first article is kind of a sad one. It's police officer killed during a traffic stop. So, Ken, tell us what that's all about.
Well, this story raises several questions. We talked about this last night, and the question that I raised is, do women have any business being police officers in the first place? So we had some interesting observations. But the story is, this young woman, 24 years old, Navy veteran and mother of a two-year-old little girl, was pulling over somebody in a traffic stop. High drug traffic area, black neighborhood, and while she was talking to this guy, he drove off, but she was caught in the vehicle somehow. So he dragged her to her death, literally. Ends up she was pinned between the vehicle and the tree. So she lost her life, this guy's put in jail, and that's pretty much the story. But, you know, this is in a black neighborhood in Newport News, Virginia. Gotta be careful.
Okay, well, the first question that I have is, how did a city get a name Newport News? I've heard that over the over time. And
maybe it's a black area, maybe it's after Newport cigarettes.
Yeah. Well, no, that I heard that over the years, Newport News, and I thought, that's a strange name for a city. And that's probably not the most important comment on this article, but that was the one that comes to mind. All right, let's talk with the distaff side first. So what do you think about, Rachel, the proposition that he said that some people are concerned about women being able to act as police officers?
Well, I certainly believe that whether it's law enforcement or the military, that women can serve a valuable role in support positions. But Elaine Donnelly, who was the vice chair of Women Military Affairs under Reagan and also is the current director of the Military for Readiness Affairs Committee, she has time and time in her think tank brought out evidence that women just physically are not up to the job. And it's not that they don't perhaps have the mental faculties, but women do not have the physical makeup to take on a lot of these violent predators, whether it's in the law enforcement part that they might be in or whether it's in the military. And so I would say that the real culprit for this policewoman's death, although it could be the black guy behind the wheel, but the real culprit is the feminist organizations out there that are pushing the idea that women have to be in these professions in order for them to be valued and honored by society. And the fact is that because they have to push this agenda in the schools shows that most women do not fight. Most women do not go for that agenda. Most women are not signing up for the military or for police professions and so forth. So they have to just continue to push and push and push this agenda on young girls. And it's proven time and time again to be dangerous for women in those professions. So I'm 100% against it.
Okay, let's talk to your dad now. What do you think?
Well, I certainly agree. Women have no place being in physical confrontation, such as law enforcement and in the military. I agree with Rachel. We think the same on that. And but part of the reason the way they entice these young girls into those professions is they throw the carrot out there. We're going to pay for your college education. We're going to give you all these benefits, and life is just going to be wonderful and beautiful, and you're going to be admired more, and so on and so forth. Yeah, and so with young girls, and young men too, for that matter, are enticed by the big, huge carrot, and the carrot also leads to death. So, and then I think studies have also shown that men have a tendency to feel they want to be protective of women, and so if they're in a situation with a woman that's in combat, their natural inclination is that they perhaps put their life on the line more in order to protect women. I think that women should be honored for the role of motherhood. We don't honor motherhood in all of this country anymore. People who are, they say, well, I'm just a housewife instead of being a housemaker. And so I think the whole culture has been demoralizing for women and have destroyed their their desire to be a very important asset to our community, and that's mothers of our children. Yeah.
Well, you know, Rachel, you said that they have to entice these people, these women, to go into these professions, and I think that's true. Women naturally gravitate to certain positions, and men gravitate to certain positions. Like, there is an article that comes out and says that, oh, we've got to overcome the wage disparity between men and women. But I think naturally, like, I went to a function where there was a gathering of marriage and family counselors, and there were just tons of women who were going to try to become marriage and family therapists or counselors. And that's not that high of a paying job, but that's what women wanted to do. They felt like they wanted to do that, and that just doesn't pay as much as someone who does a different profession. So I think there's just a natural glass ceiling by what an inclination of what women want to do. And then another thing you brought up, you said that women can serve in support roles in the military and in the police, and that brought up to mind that
I would like to address when you're done to comment that statement.
Okay, go ahead. Well, why don't you do that now, and then I'll go on to my next statement.
Okay, well, I also wanted to point out that according to studies, and I know a lot of women that have joined the military, and they've joined out of, you know, like my father said, you know, maybe they're going to pay for college, or there's all these different things, they're going to get medical benefits and so forth. But a lot of the reasons that these recruiters, how they get these women in, is by going towards the inclination they have to be helpers. So you can help unfortunate children, you can help in these communities, you can be a real helper, a real support position, and they don't understand that support positions in the military are often some of the most dangerous, because they're the ones out there in a caravan, between bases. They're the ones that are, you know, perhaps struck by roadside bombs and so forth. So maybe they're not out there, you know, doing a strict, you know, combat type position, running into some, you know, ISIS stronghold, but they're put in positions that make them very vulnerable. And a lot of women that go into the military, they don't know what they're getting into. And so when I think of support positions, whether in law enforcement or in the military, I don't think of any type of position that is going to, for the most part, cause them to be enemy fodder. I don't think, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, being a mother could be a support position in a family, but childbirth can sometimes be dangerous. So I don't think there's any way that you can assume that any support position is not going to be dangerous for women, but they have really beguiled a lot of women into thinking the positions they're taking are going to be out of harm's way, and they just are not out of
harm's way. Well, yeah, they're out of harm's way today. I mean, but back during my parents' day, it was different. Like, my wife's mother was a WAVE, which was the Navy Support Women's Corps. And then my mother was a WAC, which was the Women's Army Corps, whatever, women or what it is. And in any event, she was Jimmy Doolittle's secretary. And Jimmy Doolittle, he was a general, and he was in charge of firebombing Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, she wasn't out there doing that kind of work, but she was his assistant.
But she contributed something very valuable that was needed.
Right. And she was with the worked on the Manhattan Project, and she worked on the Bikini Atoll, the first hydrogen bomb project. And I looked through all the memorials in our house from the Manhattan Project, all that stuff. But my wife, my mother, was certainly not, you know, detonating the hydrogen bomb, but she was in a support position doing that kind of stuff. And so the support positions back then are certainly different than the ones now.
Absolutely.
They're given guns and said, go out and support your community by no-knock warrant, knock down the place and shoot the dog.
Right.
We haven't heard from the Canadian on this topic. Why don't we hear from him?
Well, I believe equality is a crock. I think we may be equal in the eyes of God, and we should be equal before the law, but equality has come to mean equal results, and expecting women to be in the military, at least be on the front line and in policing, dealing with violent criminals, is completely unfair for some of the reasons that, you know, has already been mentioned. It's not exactly military or police, but I was at a bank this afternoon, and they're freezing her little feet off in front of the bank was a security guard in front. It's cold. And there's been a lot of robberies, and so what they're doing is that, I guess for insurance purposes, they have a security person, a security guard in each bank. Each bank handles things a little differently. But they had placed her out on the public sidewalk, and she must have been, she was, I would say, about 4 foot eight. She may have been from the Philippines or something. I thought, this is utterly insane. I said to her, well, why are you out here? She said, oh, I'm security. I said, well, what could you do if I came to rob the bank? Well, she said, call 911. I thought, the people at bank could call 911 too. And I thought, if she was actually supposed to do anything other than make a phone call, she's utterly incapable. I mean, no fault of hers, but she's not a security guard.
Yeah, well, actually, in defense of women, women can indeed wield, I guess, what, tools of violence, and they can be effective. Because my mother, when I was growing up, she could really wield a hairbrush on my rear end when I did something wrong. So, there are positions that I think open to them, but if we gave her a gun, she'd probably shoot herself before she'd shoot anybody else. So, yeah. All right. Particularly...
I was going to say that there are some women, but I wouldn't mind investing. There are some that I would want to stay away from.
Oh, yeah, some of them are tough. But I have read articles where firemen say that 90% of the first responders who are women are useless. And so I think, you know, with people saying that over and over again, it'll finally sink in, and maybe we can readjust our...
Right. I mean, they could be there on site to provide medical care and things like that, but I know in our local responders with our local volunteer fire association, there's women and men on there, but none of us country folk think for a second that we're going to send, you know, our neighborhood gals into a burning fire. They might be there to help take care of a victim, and like I said, nurse them or, you know, give some nursing care and so forth, but none of our good old boys out in Arkansas would expect a woman to run into a burning building. And if they did, like my dad said a little bit ago, some of the other firefighters, they'd be worried sick and wouldn't be able to pay attention to the previous victim. They'd be worried about their wife or daughter or sister running into a burning building. So
yeah, okay. I think the important thing is that everybody deserves respect and honor for the jobs they do. They don't have to be the same. If the brainless interpretation of equality, that equality means the same. That, you know, they, you know, if a man can carry a 200-pound injured person out of a burning building, then a woman should too. And if she's not allowed to, then, you know, there's a horrible conspiracy of sexism against her. That's just not it. I think everybody deserves honor and respect for what they are, and our roles are different.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on.
I want to add real quickly, saying that also applies to men, because there are a lot of elderly men who cannot do the job that a young man can do. So it's really not sexism, it's based upon the capabilities of the individual. And young men are stronger, are able to do more. You get some old guy in his 70s, 80s, he can't throw a 200-pound pack on his back, he can't rub a ladder to a burning building, he can't do those things. Isn't because anybody's being sexist, or isn't because anybody's being disrespectful, it's just that old guys can't do what young guys can do.
Okay, all right, well, let's move on to the next article. Can you go ahead and read that one? That's hate group kills a bunch of people in the past 30 days.
Okay, there were 1,026 human beings killed in the last 30 days by a hate group. Does anybody want to guess the name of the hate group? And for some reason, the media is bypassing this. Let me give you some stats real quick. There were 142 attacks during the 30 days, more than 4 per day on the average. 34.2 on average were killed every single day. That's basically more than one death per hour, every hour, nonstop, day after day. Virtually all the victims were what the Marxists like to call people of color. There were several instances where children were victims. But for some reason, the media doesn't want us to talk about this. They just want to pretend it's not going on. But they will.
I can guess, but I'll let you guys say what it is. What is it you got?
I'm going to guess just Islam.
Oh, I'm going to guess it's Planned Parenthood. But
that's a good answer.
I don't
good
know.
Good answer.
What is it, Ken?
This is Islam. And by the way, last year they killed over 10,000 people in hate group attacks. This is typical month for Islam. But for some reason, the media is demonizing the Ku Klux Klan. They're demonizing, anybody to the right of center is hate groups. They're calling Donald Trump a racist. Are you kidding me? But these people are killing people of color every single day. It's just nonsense. So it just bothers me, the divergence of thinking, where we have been convinced that somehow the good guys are the bad guys, and the bad guys, we need to open the borders and let them come in. And by the way, they kill women, and they also throw homosexuals off top tall buildings. The divergence is just insane.
Well, I think this is an underlying result of the right-wing, left-wing propaganda stating that, you know, that racism needs to be curtailed at every possible turn. And if you were to say Islam is bad, that can be considered racist or Islamophobic or anti-religion. But if you say white and Christianity is bad, you don't get that same blowback. And I think that's all because of the mainstream media, and the average person out there is afraid to criticize someone because they don't want the criticism to leveled back at them, but they feel comfortable criticizing whites because, one, that's usually that's what their own background is in Christianity, because that's what they were raised. So I think it's just a timid approach because they don't want to be called names.
Well, absolutely. There's an ongoing assault on Western Christian civilization, upon our morals and our values. And like you say, you can criticize white people and Christianity all day long, but the minute you criticize some other religion or some other color of people, then that immediately becomes the definition of racism. You know, they don't think people of color or people of other religions can be racist. Only white people, only white Christians are the ones that they have deemed can be racist. And so they can get away with attacking us and attacking our values and our culture and our way of life and the many contributions and laws that have helped propel families and communities forward and really have, I believe, helped bring peace to many nations. But you can't turn around and discuss the negatives of any of these other groups, and especially like you mentioned about women. I mean, where in the heck do these people get off, some of these feminist groups, getting upset when you decry about Muslims? And yet they should be, I mean, if anyone's going to be on the front lines against Islam, it should be them. But they're crazy.
Well, Ken, you said that most of the victims are people of color. Does this mean that they're mostly attacking these people in Africa or in the Middle East? Where are most of these murders and deaths occurring?
Virtually all of them are in the Middle East or in sub-Saharan Africa. Depends on how you find the Middle East, but get outside, go up Afghanistan, wherever.
And is it attacks because they're Christian or because they're... why are they going after all of these people and killing them? Because, I mean, we can make an argument that the Christians and the white race are killing all sorts of people when we go to war. Because, you know, I mean, if it's just a war, that's a different component than if it's attacking someone because they don't like whatever.
Well, you got to keep in mind, this has been going on for, how old is Islam, 1,400 years? So this has been going on nonstop that long, year after year. But to answer your question, what we're finding happening is the victims of the attacks are primarily black people. Let me bring this up on the screen. You guys can't see this. But for example,
so I feel like Christians in a sub-Saharan country that has a large number of Muslims in them, is that what it's
well, about? Particularly in Nigeria. So, yeah, for example, sure. Well, so Somalia, there were 8 killed on the 2nd. How do you pronounce this? Burkina Faso, which is a black nation, 20 people were killed, assuming they're all black. DRC, Congo, there were 14 people killed on the reported, I should say, January 31st. The day before that, another 24 were killed. In Nigeria, the day before that, nope, same day, there were 3 people killed. Cameroon, there were 5 people killed. This is all the same day. These are all black people. So if Bill and Ruth killed 5 people, it would, you know, they'd start ripping down flags. But these are black people. It's okay to kill them, I guess, if you're in the DRC or Cameroon or Nigeria. But if you're in South Carolina, Charleston, nope, can't kill them. It's a safe zone. I don't.
Well, I think it's also partially a function of America's ethnocentricity and inward-looking approach to the news. When I was living in Japan and when I lived in Korea, the newspapers, the English language newspapers, covered every conceivable international incident out there, and they focused on America not so much. But if you look at an American paper or even the American news compilation site now, they will ignore a lot of what's going on around the world, and particularly they will ignore a lot of the stuff that's going on in Africa because the readership isn't particularly interested. And I don't think the media is particularly anti-Africa or anti-black, because they certainly would deny that. But I think the readership doesn't really care what's going on in, what is it, Sierra Leone or Burkina Faso, whatever it is. We don't care,
why
so don't make it in the news.
You know, why don't we care? The media can make us care. The media can make us think whatever they want. So why are these lives, why do these black lives?
Well, I think matter? I think it's partially a function of what is it called, white privilege. If some tragedy took place in Norway, when Norway used to be white, then the world is interested in that because you don't want to see all of these white kids getting killed. But to lose a bunch of black kids in Sierra Leone, we don't care so much. And I think there is a white privilege component of that. The world is more concerned about white people, and for good or for bad, than any other group of people.
Well, for comparison, how many people have been killed by this, what's it called, the coronavirus?
Yeah.
And you compare that to this massacre.
I don't know if coronavirus killed anyone.
By comparison, you know, this is an epidemic, and it's literally over a millennia, you know, centuries old. Nonstop. I'm sorry, Paul, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Well, you ask, well, why is this? And I think various people have given reasons that are valid. But to recognize that radical Islam has killed, and I forget the figure you just used, but over 1,000 people in a month, and they're black, most of them are black, it would be to make a negative judgment about a privileged group, and that's what Islam, because we were assured in 2001 after the Twin Towers went up that Islam was a religion of peace. And I thought at that point, that president's on track. It's not a religion of peace, but we have to pretend it is, because if we recognize the truth, then we might ask all very awkward questions like, well, would these people be a good match to bring into our countries? And of course, we mustn't ask that question, because that criticizes multiculturalism and you know the replacement of our people, which is the end game goal. But you were mentioning a coronavirus. We had a very interesting incident in Canada this last week. one of the senior reporters for one of the major TV news shows went to his Chinese barber, and the Chinese barber in Vancouver was wearing a face mask because everybody's afraid of the coronavirus. And so the reporter took a picture of himself with the Chinese barber, and he tweeted it out. I'm glad I only got a haircut. 24 hours later, he's fired. He only got a haircut. He didn't catch coronavirus. It was kind of a lame joke. But it's interesting, following this story online, who denounced it? It wasn't the Chinese. It wasn't upset Chinese. Many Chinese say, yeah, it's a joke, no problem. It was white social justice warriors. Just looked at the last name. It wasn't Wang or Wong or Smith or Jones or things like that. We have just a corrosive element of white race traitors who will do us in.
But yeah. They think it's a moral imperative to do that. So someone's got inside their head and twisted their thinking.
Yeah, we're in some ways, black lives don't matter. I forget that some fellow shot up a synagogue, about a year ago. That very weekend, 60 people, probably all black or Hispanics, were killed in Detroit. In Chicago. The usual black on black violence for whatever reason. And yet, we heard us about this synagogue for weeks.
Well, black lives matter to the far left because they can be exploited to advance their agenda. So, when they say black lives matter, that's what I think.
Okay.
Right, and when the news of the shooting in a synagogue dies down, then they'll pick back up the Black Lives Matter story. So they just want this, this buffet of tidbits of anti-bias, anti-white news that they can choose from depending on what they have available for the day.
See, but if you can't spin Black Lives Matter to blaming whites, then they're not interested. I mean, the killings in Chicago, I would say, are probably 100% blacks wasting of the blacks for whatever reason. Well, you can't blame white people for that. So at that point, black lives don't matter.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I think we've exhausted this topic. Let's go to the next one. The next topic is alien accused of reducing the nation's Social Security payment burden. What's that all about?
Okay, I'm taking a look here. What is that again?
He took out an 89-year-old Social Security pensioner.
All right. I was looking for the headline. I said, hey, I didn't have that in my list. All right, this is a story of an 89-year-old woman. She was on her way to buy daffodils. I guess that's what you do when you're approaching your 90th birthday. So she's on the way to buy daffodils, and she is struck down by a hit-and-run driver, who it turns out is an illegal alien who was, by his own admission, I don't know that he admitted being intoxicated, but he did admit, according to the story, of having a couple of beers before he got behind the wheel of the car. Now, here's the story. It's bad enough that he killed this little lady, and it's bad enough that he's in the country. But what bothers me about this is they're going to send him home. You know, the guy commits effectively second-degree murder. I don't know, Bill, if that would qualify or not. So his punishment is, well, we're going to send him home without dinner, I guess.
Where did this lady get killed at? What city?
Where was it? Sorry, I do not remember.
Okay.
But this guy was from Mexico.
He's from Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Did you say send him home, he'll be deported to Mexico, is that right?
Yeah, that's it. They just sent him home, and he's going to probably do whatever he did before he came here.
Yeah. Well, he'll be back.
He'll come back to the U.S.
Yeah, he may try to cross back over the border.
Yeah.
How do they get by without charging him for a crime? Why is he being charged?
I mean, just being sent home, I mean, if I go and commit a crime, would that be my punishment? They'll send me home?
That's it. This, by the way, occurred in Oregon, and apparently he was protected, if I understand Breitbart correctly, he was protected by the sanctuary state's laws.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it took place in Oregon. There's your answer right there. That's why he was not charged. Oregon is one of the most liberal states out there. But this brings up an ancillary issue, is that I've read articles that said that if you get pulled over, everybody that's just as drunk as can be, they always say, I had a couple of beers. And if you say you had a couple of beers, that means you're drunk. And so the article said, never ever say you've had a couple of beers, because that's as admitting that you're going to have to walk the line, they're going to have to give a breathalyzer test, and they're probably going to taser you. So all of those that you have to drink out there, never say I had a couple of beers.
Steve, Representative Steve King from Iowa, I'm going to say, it seems like yesterday, but I think it was probably about 10 years or so ago now, but he came out with a study showing that the number of U.S. citizens killed by Mexican illegal alien drunk drivers, illegal alien, some sort of traffic accident, hit and runs and things like that, was three times higher, if I remember this correctly, than all the number of U.S. service people killed in the entire Desert Storm war for 20 years, and called it an epidemic, and that was about 10 years ago. And as we see, it just continues to escalate. I don't remember the name of the woman, but I saw a news story the other day. Her daughter had been killed by an illegal alien. He was heading back to Mexico. I mean, they're like their free pass. Kill somebody here. They don't care about our immigration laws, so why would they care about our traffic laws?
Right.
Kill someone, maim someone, and then off they go to Central America or Mexico or somewhere, and they're off scot-free.
Well, I think that it doesn't end at the death of the accident, because the next article said that they held a funeral and two people were killed at the funeral. They're shooting him up. So you get it, you get killed in the car, and then at the funeral, all your buddies get killed. So what's this next article about, Ken?
This is a story in Riviera Beach, Florida, and it doesn't give a lot of details, but I did some research on that city, and the demographics explain it, that it's 68.3% black. All right, there's a funeral. They didn't give any details other than it was a funeral. Presumably, it was a black church based upon the demographics, and the name of the pastor was Tywante, I think. Tywante. I'm assuming it's a black person. In fact, I know it is because I Googled her name. So it's a black church, and there's a couple people shot.
That sounds Scottish to you?
I think it was like
Tywante. Like a Scottish name?
I pronounce it in my head Tywante, so.
Yeah, just call her pastor. That'll work. But the point is, a couple people were shot at the funeral. I don't know if they were actually shot on the church property, but another thing that was telling about the story is they know that there were 13 shots fired, and the reason is, in this community, they have listening devices. Apparently, strategically placed throughout the community, so when gunfires occur, gunshots occur, they can hear them, and they can count them. They might have those things in my neighborhood.
So I'm curious, 13 shots and only 2 hits?
No, they got
it. In poor marksmanship.
No, they got
scored. And at a funeral home, I guess it's a drive-by funeral. That's why it happened.
No, it's kind of like McDonald's and it's a funeral. But there were four people shot. Two of them were fatalities. There were two of them zero.
That reminds me of it's almost a very similar incident maybe a decade ago in Toronto, in an area I actually used to represent. It's very, very, that part of it's very, very black. And a young black gangster being shot, killed. So there was a funeral at one of these black churches, and two of the brothers went out on the front step to have a cigarette. I guess they didn't want to listen to the preacher anymore. A drive-by came by from another gang and killed them on the on the steps of the church. I always think about that when we hear slogans like Black Lives Matter. Yeah, I can agree Black Lives Matter, but don't tell me. Tell other blacks. They're the ones killing them.
Well, here a few months ago, Mr. Johnson may recall this a little better than I can. But I believe it was in L.A., possibly San Diego, but there was a reformed black, I guess he used to be like a street hoodlum, but he cleaned his act up, and he was a quite popular rapper, and he was trying to help his neighborhood, help the kids in the area, and he was killed by former gang members. And then at the funeral, then there were shootings that broke out, and additional people shot, and just kind of ended up, I don't know if you recall that, it was all over the entertainment news, if you ever catch any of that. But so it seems like shootings at black funerals are...
Yeah.
Well, it is right. The same story.
That particular story is actually recounted every month here in L.A., so I can't particularly... Everybody in the black community, they're all rappers, and they all get shot. So I'm not sure exactly which one you're talking about. But this does bring up a question. When you were...
Here's the most popular one.
Right. That was Kobe Bryant. When I was growing up, I went to a number of funerals because it seemed like all the geezers were dying when I was a little kid. And we never would have anything. It was all reverence and concern and boring sermons. We never would have even had, in our country, would have had this kind of shoot-em-ups for funerals. And I think this is just one example of how we have degenerated and how we've accepted that degeneration. So we have to deal with
it. I think probably we can say that did not exist 50, 60 years ago when we were any white rule in the country. Black people were much better off, had stronger families, stronger relationships with their spouses. They certainly had a better economy than they have today. I think that what we have is the black people themselves. And you know, we understand that there are black families that are hurting when a loved one of theirs gets shot and killed. And we have compassion for that black family. But in reality, if we had a white rule in this country like we used to have, black community would be much safer, much stronger. Not only would white people be safe, but black people, their own community would be much safer.
Well, they just wouldn't dare shoot up a church, whether it's black or white. I mean, there was a sense of law and order. And, you know, we have to remember, in Toronto, it's the same way as it is in most American cities. Almost all the victims of black crime are other blacks. I mean, their own criminal, feral, out of control gangsters are their worst enemies.
I just need to add as an aside, and I'm sure you all agree with it, the reference to white rule is really a taboo issue, and we should not have white rule. We should have a white ethnostate made up of only our people. So there's no such thing as white rule. They can be over there in Africa. The only white rule we have over them is to limit their number to their reproduction numbers to 1 to every 10 families. That's the only white rule we need to have over there. But in any event, let's move right along. Let's go this as, next topic is racism. Governor called something by GOP state leader. What is that all about, Ken?
This is a Republican state senator in Kentucky that referred to the governor of Virginia as Ralph Kuhnman Northam. Is that how you pronounce his name? Is it Northam or Northam? So apparently, back when the governor was in the college, he had a couple nicknames, and one of them was Kuhnman. He says he doesn't know how he got the name, but he's the guy, if you remember correctly, if I remember correctly, I think, he was a guy in college, put on blackface and did a Michael Jackson imitation, which, of course, is taboo. But, you know, as I was writing this article, blackface and the word coon are both considered racist. And I was thinking about that. Why? I mean, what could conceivably possibly be racist about blackface? Nobody gets upset about whiteface. What is it about being playing the part of a black person. Michael Jackson's an example of whiteface,
Yeah, well, times changed dramatically because I represent. Do you guys know who Al Jolson was? Al Jolson was the most popular entertainer and singer in the 1920s. And then he would be dressed in blackface, and he'd go, "Mammy, I love you, Mama," and it was just gross. And you know, but he was very popular. He was a Jewish fellow and didn't have any kids of his own, but he adopted a child who got hit in a car wreck, and so he needed help and care. And so I helped out. I was a lawyer for his estate, the Al Jolson Jr. until he died. And I just recall that I would go to look at all of these old Al Jolson things on the internet, and they're just gross. They're not interesting at all, but they're all in blackface, and it was so popular back then. Back then, blackface and mimicking minstrels was a popular entertainment form. But now, of course, it is totally taboo, and I think Bill Clinton also dressed up in blackface and as this Northrop governor. So times change where now it's unacceptable, but back then it was less unacceptable.
Well, which is worse, blackface or black rappers who use profanity, degrade women, call each other the N-word? Once again, we have this problem with the emergence of, just hypocrisy.
Well, it's again, if you take a look at today's society, just as a microscope on today, then you have to say that wearing blackface is less accepted in society than using all of these bad words and saying bad things about women. So yeah, right now, blackface is a bigger crime.
Who makes these rules?
That's something right there. Is that I was intervening in a free speech case some years ago, and I did a lot of research, and this would be about 10 years ago, into lyrics for rap songs. The point we were trying to make to the tribunal was what our guy had said was very mild compared to the lyrics of a lot of these rap songs, which you can hear on radio, that they're widely available. This fellow had a little website where he said certain nasty comments about homosexuals, blacks, etc. And I was I was absolutely floored by the violence. Rape the bitch, that it was like utter degradation of women, advocating the murder of police, just reveling in violence, and your street cred or your reputation was what a bad dude you'd be, which meant you were good because you'd be bad, and it was just a brutality that would make Al Capone look like
That underscores different societies at different times place emphasis on different sins. Like right now today, if you were to even mention about bombing or making a bomb or something like that, the feds would come down and they would just come right on, and they would arrest you, and then they'd put you in jail for even talking about that. But I remember in the 1960s, you had Columbia, I guess it was 1970, you had the alma mater, the statue in Columbia. It was bombed. People were going around bombing Campbell Hall and the University of Oregon. And you had the Symbionese Liberation Army running around shooting up banks and putting bombs under police cars. And that was not condemned. It was condemned by the police, had bombs put under their cars. But a large segment of society looked at bombing as not so bad as they look at it today. And if you go back to the previous generation, during Clarence Darrow, who was the most famous lawyer in the 1920s, he defended the McCormick brothers who bombed the LA Times building. And his defense was that there were a lot of bombings that took place all around the country to protest union busters. And these were protest bombings. It didn't mean that he caused any real harm. It just so happened the McCormick brothers put the bombs next to barrels of ink that caused a fire and killed people. But his defense was it was a legitimate bombing. So in the 1920s, they say bombings were legitimate. In the 1970s, it wasn't legitimate, but it was done. Nowadays, if you say the word bomb, you'll get arrested and thrown in and taken out to Guantanamo Bay.
Kicked off YouTube.
Yeah, the point I'm making is that different different times, different eras in a society view things differently. So it's up to us to start moving the dialogue and saying things that will make take us back to where those bad things are bad, and other things, you know, where we can say bad things about white people is going to be bad.
Although I know my father and I are going to stand our course and not say the bomb word. So
yeah, very good. All right.
Let me make a comment here. I think in all these issues, Ken, a few moments ago, he would hit the nail on the head, and that is whatever promotes their agenda. So it doesn't make a difference what the issue is. We talk about Islamic killings, we talk about white women or women being killed in these forces, in black crime, black murders in Chicago. Whatever promotes their agenda, they're going to embrace that. And their agenda is create white guilt. In anything, we try to read, why do they do that? Why do they do that? This, that, the other. And the bottom line is, whatever promote the agenda of white guilt, they're going to embrace that. And that's what we need to encourage people to have pride in who they are, pride in their heritage. And we have no reason to feel guilty for whatever happens. We have to feel guilty for it, and we should feel guilty that we have not stepped up to the plate, claimed our position of power in this country. That'll be a blessing to all people.
I think the next article is an absolute epitome of that statement. It illustrates white guilt exactly. It's about a judge who had to apologize for saying something. Go ahead and give us that detail.
Just a point of interest before we hit the next story. Newport News was named for Christopher Newport, captain of the Susan Constant, the late ship of the three-ship fleet that carried the Jamestown settlers to the New World in 1607. The place where that occurred became known for Newport's Good News, or Newport's News, and eventually just Newport News.
All right.
So all these years I thought it was named after a newspaper.
Yeah, so did I. Okay, that's good to know. Okay,
a Tennessee judge said that he regrets saying the word regular white man. Why would a judge regret saying regular white man? Here we go with the guilt. Judge Haywood Berry's words are apparently recorded in a courtroom during a private conversation. He said, I'm not going to be a slave. Now, I think the backstory is there was maybe a trial coming up and he didn't want to get stuck in the courtroom. So he wanted to be just a regular white guy. You know, time to go home and have dinner. He didn't want to be a slave to the court. Well, they took all these words that somebody recorded him saying, put them all together, and, you know, on came the guilt. So I wrote this: to a nation I presented it to race, most any allusion to race by a white person can be deemed racism. Here's what he said: I'm sorry I made it. I'm ashamed of the fact that something like that would even come out of my brain now. It doesn't bother me. What bothers me is that he apologized. To me, that is infinitely more offensive, than, because what he said, there was absolutely positively nothing wrong about it. What was his intent? I have no idea, but to me, there's nothing offensive about that. The fact is, Bill would probably say, white people are probably more offended than black people are. Now, Bill might want to weigh on this. Tennessee's judicial court code of conduct prohibits words like manifest bias or prejudice based on race. So, I don't know. Was he out of line? Can that be construed as violating? This was in Tennessee, by the way.
You have to be so careful what you say if you're in a position of authority. So, he was regretting that because everything that a white person says can be construed improperly. In fact, if you the Madison Avenue, if they were to create a commercial now that had a white family, a mother and a father and two beautiful little blonde children, they would be accused of racism for promoting that environment. We live in such messed up times that everything is construed to be anti-white, is racist. And so that's what we have to deal with. I mean, there was an article recently, and I guess this is maybe a more extreme example. There was an assistant coach somewhere, a football coach. They asked him, well, who would you like to have dinner with historically? He says, you know, I would like to go into the mind of Adolf Hitler. I'd like to have lunch with him. And what happened? He had to resign that day. He couldn't even last the day they made him resign. And he apologized profusely. What was I thinking? Why did I let that thought come into my head? It's just crazy.
That's not even a statement of support. That's a statement that said, I'm trying to figure out what's going on in this guy's head. You know, there's lots of people I like to give to the head to figure out what's going on.
There was a city councilman, this was a few years ago, when they were talking about the budget, and he says, well, we shouldn't be so niggardly. And niggardly was so stingy, and as a result, he had to resign because he used a word that people didn't know what it meant.
That was when Marion Barry, the great crack, cocaine addict, was mayor of Washington, D.C., and even when it was explained, this controversy went on for a couple of weeks, even when it was explained in niggardly, for those who didn't understand these things, meant cheap or a typhoid, even with that explanation, he still had to resign because it sounded like
I just finished reading a book on labor relations in the late 1900s and Industrial Revolution and so forth by a very liberal scholar, and he makes a big point about talking about the anti-black, anti-Mexican discrimination in America at that time and what a movement there was to unify white Americans and Protestant Americans and so forth, and his whole repertoire of talking about anti-black discrimination, he used the word jerry-rig as a slam against the Irish at least a dozen times and thought nothing of it.
No, absolutely not. Jerry-rig is going against the Germans. Jerry is a German, I think.
Well, I thought it was Irish, but who am I to know?
I think it's German, but I don't know. I'm not a linguist, but yeah.
What happened to that college coach is frightening. That this is the new cancel culture. Nation, I'm sure, prides itself on its tolerance. It's brutally intolerant. One mistake, and he's gone. There's an English writer who's written about this cancel culture, and he says that there's something really frightening about it. That there is no room for forgiveness. There's no idea that, well, the sinner might be able to reborn. We've caught you, and you must be destroyed. And in the sense of he loses his job. He didn't get a chance to say, well, you know, maybe on second thought, or this is actually what I meant. No, he used the word Hitler. And he's got to go. I'm sure if he said he'd like to get in have lunch with Saddam Hussein or Joseph.
Genghis Khan.
That'd be okay. Well, you know,
if he said Donald Trump, he'd probably be fired too.
Well, if you had dinner with Idi Amin, you may actually be dinner.
Yeah, it'd be dinner. That's right. Well. I lost my train of thought. But okay. Well, in any event, you guys, this has been a very good show. And I guess we're going to be going off the air now. So in closing, do you guys have anything you want to say?
I've enjoyed myself and hope we get to meet up with you all in some other format and some other time.
Very good. Canada?
It's been a real pleasure working with all of you. I think we've got a really good thing going, and I'm hoping, maybe with a few tweaks or whatever, that it can be revived.
Yeah, very good. How about you, Pastor Rob? In closing?
I have nothing to say, but I'm going to go to my safe place now and cry.